you will never be nearly as successful as you can be financially as long as you aren't looking at your money, as long as you're feeling a lack of self-worth because you're trying mm-hmm. to fill a hole that is bottomless. It's like there's just not enough retail therapy that you can do, which is essentially spending money to mm-hmm. fill a hole inside yourself mm-hmm. because of your own worthiness.
Welcome to the Unconditionally Worthy podcast. In this podcast, I will guide you on your journey to connect with the true source of your self-worth. Each week, we'll discuss barriers to unconditional self-worth, the connection between self-worth and relationships, self-worth practices you can apply to your life, and how to use self-worth as a foundation for living courageously. I'm your host, Dr. Adia Gooden, a licensed clinical psychologist, dance enthusiast, and a dark chocolate lover who believes deeply that you are worthy unconditionally. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Unconditionally Worthy podcast. I'm excited about the podcast episode today because I have my coach, Belinda Rosenblum, here. She is my coach around sort of financial things and business things and stepping into my CEO role. And so it's been a really helpful experience to work with her and really sort of own myself as a CEO, as a business owner, and really shift things for that. And I feel like this is sort of like me owning my own business is kind of the next level for me of kind of working on my money story and unfolding new places in my self-worth journey. And so it's been really helpful to have a coach on this journey. And I'm excited to have her here. She shares her own journey of, you know, having financial challenges to being a self-made millionaire. And, you know, she talks about mindset shifts. We talk about mindset shifts and how you need to own your finances, own your worth, and how that sets you up for really living a wonderful life. I know that you're going to get so much out of this episode. So tune in. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Unconditionally Worthy podcast. I'm so excited to have my coach and friend, Belinda Rosenblum, here with me on the podcast today. Belinda is a CPA and profit strategist of Own Your Money. She helps busy female coaches and experts sustainably scale their revenue and profits by up-leveling their financial systems and strategies and stepping into the CEO role with her signature Cashflow CEO Accelerator program, which I am a part of. She believes it's time female entrepreneurs feel worthy and safe with money, finally enjoy the freedom they started their business for in the first place, and consistently take home the money they want each month. It is possible. Her recent breast cancer survival journey has even further inspired her to support women to create freedom-based businesses where they can take care of themselves and enjoy healthy, sustainable profits. Belinda is also the co-author of Self-Worth to Net Worth, 12 Keys to Creating Wealth Inside and Out, and became a self-made millionaire at 33. If she's not inspiring you to be your best self, Belinda is likely cycling around town or outside playing with her marathon running husband, newly college graduated stepdaughter, and two spirited young kids. Welcome to the podcast, Belinda. I'm so glad you're here.
Awesome. I'm like, she sounds really great. That was a heck of a bio. Thank you. She is. Thank you. You
know, I love it.
It's so funny because I was like, well, you could just give me your own description of me. You know, I feel like you've known me now for a couple of years at this point, probably. It's like dog years when you're in entrepreneurship. You know what I mean? But but yeah, it's amazing. I'm excited to be here. And I have been on the self-worth journey personally for years and really an advocate. Right. Of prioritizing self-worth, even though like I've been a money coach and a profit strategist and all of that. For me, it's always been grounded in who we are and who we believe ourselves to be first and foremost. And then we can layer on the money and the potential and the career and the growth and all of that. But if we don't have our self-worth, it's almost like the rest of it doesn't matter. And, you know, I live that. Like I've been in the corporate job where you're making a healthy six figures and you hate your life. And then you're like, wait, yep. Is this, what is this? You know, is this really all it's cracked up to be kind of a thing? Like, what is this about? You know? Mm-hmm. And it's not just about like the trappings of what other people see. It's about, what do you believe about yourself? And if there were moments where I did not believe terribly good, happy thoughts about myself, you know, and it took some work, took some therapy, it took some coaches, it took some programs to, and some introspection, because I feel like part of it is that I'll speak personally, I was such a driver and I kept myself so busy that there wasn't a lot of time to even have any awareness that I didn't have the self-worth and the inner confidence that I really wanted to have in my life as a woman. Sorry to go deep in the first 3 seconds.
No, but, I mean, I like diving into the deep end, certainly. So that's perfect. Okay. And there's so much that you're saying that I think what I want to do is like put a mental pin in it. Yeah. I'm going to see if kind of hold these things, because I want to dig deeper. And I really would love to start with you sharing even a little bit more about your self-worth journey. So you're mentioning sort of having that corporate job, six-figure salary, realizing, you know, it didn't feel, you know, great. Yeah. So I'd love for you to just share a little bit more about your own self-worth journey.
Sure. It's funny because every time I like watch your videos or I listen to your podcast, I think about it. I'm like, gosh, where did my self-worth journey start? And you guys are going to crack up. When I was little, but you know, it's like my parents got separated when I was 7. And I think that it really rocked my world from such an early stage. Right? That they separated at 7, they got divorced at 11. And I stepped in as that older sister. I'll just take care of everybody. When I'm at my mom's house, I'll do all the dad roles. When I'm at my dad's house, I'll do all the mom roles. And really, like, was way older sort of in my responsibilities than I would have wanted for a 10-year-old, than I hope for our 10-year-old, you know, because our son's almost 10. And so I think early on, I started to teach myself, the more that you do, the happier people will be. You know, it was like a very early need for pleasing and for being chosen in the custody battle and like all, you know, feeling like the divorce was our fault. You know, there's so many emotions and we have to remind ourselves. So I'm 51 now. I like to think I look good for my age, but like, these are things that I remember vividly from when I was 7, when they got separated. Yeah. You know, it's like those things leave such a traumatic mark on us. And we need to be able to heal. I've done a lot of like inner child work, even like heal that child that felt like she caused the divorce. And like there was some part about she wasn't good enough. So I think it actually did start that young.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it back then. You know what I mean? Back then I was just trying to be the A student and the talented and gifted and all the things, right? So I would be liked and loved and all that. And so then I kept going. I was a very high functioning people pleaser. You know, I was in the top 20 in my high school class, got the scholarship to college. I swam on the high school swim team and then college swim team. Although I will say that was not like a cap of achievement in that I was the worst one on both teams. But in high school, I was the co-captain because I was such a cheerleader. Like I was like the one that everybody wanted to motivate them. But I came in last in so many of my races. But the point here, right, is that I found ways to feel better about myself, to prove myself, to, you know, to do good in the world kind of thing. And so then I graduate, I get the job, you know, I do the internship, I get the job, all that stuff. Now, fast forward, now I'm 21. I just graduated college. My father had a stroke. And so then I'm now, and my parents have been divorced years before, right? So now I'm all of a sudden CFO, essentially, of our family at 21, just started a new job. Wasn't a job I would have ever wanted, you know, at that stage of my life. My sister had just started college. My dad wasn't remarried and it was all on me. And so then it like upped the need to prove myself and be the good daughter and all of that, right? So it kind of locked in now as an adult, right? This is who you have to be in the world. So I kind of, you know, I made sure he was okay, kind of band-aided everything together and started to just rededicate myself to work. And that was like, okay, let's lean into work. Now, I was dating somebody from 18 to 28 and I was kind of miserable in that relationship. I realize now. A lot of it was long distance. And how do I say this well? I just wasn't getting prioritized. He was a basketball coach. Mm-hmm. He was on the road, like a college basketball coach. He was on the road a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think that was when I had to start to realize, like, is this how I want to be treated?
Mm.
You know, and I think that sometimes we tolerate mm-hmm. a lot of things from mm-hmm. the men that we date and from the jobs that we have. And it was when 28 was a very pivotal year for me. So it started when I bought a house. I bought a 2-family house because I was like, well, I don't know what his role is going to be in it, but I know what my role is going to be. I watched my family struggle with money because of all this divorce mm. and all this stuff. And we can draw different conclusions from what we see as children mm-hmm. around money. The conclusion I drew was I don't want to be poor, was I don't want to struggle. And so I invested in a 2-family house. And I rented out one unit, and then I had my unit, and then I even rented out a room in my unit. So I was like house hacking mm. before it was a thing, mm. you know, because 28 was yeah. a long time ago, 23 years ago, right? So so that's what I started to do. And then I, but the challenge was that I was working so much. I now had so much of a burden of all of my dad's finances that it all started to pile up in this new house now, right? Mm. And so it was like, I had all these bills. I had all these responsibilities. I was traveling a lot for work. I worked for one of those big 4 accounting firms. And it started to just overwhelm me. You know, if you ever feel like your life is overwhelming, that's kind of how I felt. And mm-hmm. so my sister one day was like, hey, how are you holding up? Like, do you have everything together? And I just couldn't hold in the lie anymore. Do you know what I mean? And be like, oh yeah, everything's fine. You know, mm-hmm. it's like fine. Mm-hmm. And everything wasn't fine. Mm-hmm. And so I did one of the scariest things. If there are any avoiders out there of your money and your bills, you know what I'm talking about. So I pulled together all of the piles of mail and all the stuff in the drawers and the baskets and the dressers and the desks and all the things. Mm. And it literally, I put my dining room table on. I felt like I was stared down by like these 3 huge stacks of bills and mail. And it really hit home, like on my own shame and worthiness. And like, how could I let this happen? And, you know, I literally started to have this like panic attack sitting there at the table. And or what I now know was probably a panic attack. I got up and I start pacing and I'm like all of those negative thoughts about like, maybe I'm not good enough. And how could I have let this happen? And could my dad get kicked out of the nursing home he was in? And it was a lot. I mean, it was like 8 credit cards, 4 bank accounts. Like it was, you could have added a partridge in a pear tree and then you would have been complete. Like it was that kind of a thing, you know? And so then in that moment, I caught my breath and I was like, wait a second. Like I can treat this like everything else in my life. I can figure it out. You know, I now think of it like I could own my money instead of feeling so owned by it. But I had this sense that financial independence meant I had to do it all on my own. And that was just BS. Mm. And so in that moment, I phoned a friend. She then, it was a very challenging phone call. I remember I was like, is there any chance you can come over and help me? And there was like what felt like minutes of a pause. It was probably like 3 seconds. But to me, it was like, oh my God, what is she going to say? What is she going to think of me? So then she came over that weekend. And then it took 6 months actually for me to really dig myself out. Because even though I was doing it, the mail keeps coming. Do you know what I mean? It was like it didn't stop just because I was now paying more attention to it. The bills got more colorful over time as I avoided more of them, you know, but it took 6 months, got over it. She came over several weekends. And I remember there was one time where I was just sitting at dinner and my dad was checking in with me on something financial related. And I could actually look him in the eye and know that, yes, I did, in fact, have everything handled because I decided that I wanted to handle not just the tactics, like not just the papers. So yes, I had to have like an organizational system, but I had to get my own mindset upgraded. You know, I had to realize like, and it's sort of like early stage growth mindset, like again, kind of before the book came out, but recognizing that I can be good at this. It was just that I hadn't read the books. I didn't understand it, you know, and then I had to set up a system that included a stronger mindset around money as well, and healing some of my own money traumas and because money got associated with a lot of pain because my parents were spending so much money on that divorce, for instance, right? And so I had to learn how to release and forgive and move on through some of that. And so that was when I was 28. And then I broke up with that guy, same year. You know, it was a big year. That's why I said it was a big year.
A lot of clearing out of stuff.
A lot of letting go, a lot of clearing out. And then that set the path, right? I was already a saver. You know, I had made good investments in real estate, but I didn't feel good about it, right? So that's when things really started to shift, when I was like, okay, wait a second. You know, who's going to own my life? It's going to be me, right? That needed to step up. There's no, as Susie Orman would say, and I don't really quote her very much, but it's like, you have to save yourself. You know, you have to want to save yourself. And so that was the choice that I had to make, to realize I could have a relationship with myself, right? There were things that I could do to spend time with myself. I was totally that one who was like so busy every night, you know, and always booked and would never like go to the movies or dinner by myself. I had friends that would do that, but that was for them. Like, I couldn't handle it. And so then the next 10 years was really a journey to connect with myself more, to create a relationship with myself, to heal some of the stuff that I think I was living out through the relationships that I was in, and to decide that I was worth the relationship, that I was worth having money and having it taken care of in a way that felt like I was literally changing the legacy, you know, of my family, because I watched my mom struggle. I watched my dad had like 7 jobs, you know, and we had the money for the things we wanted to do, but they worked really hard to make that happen. And I think this was all part of, so that was 28. And then the next 5 years I kept saving, and now I wasn't avoiding. So I was saving money on all the late fees and like all the other things, right? And really started to own my own success. And then, so 33, I remember doing a little net worth statement and figured out, holy crap, I did it. Like, I'm now a millionaire, at least on paper. It's not like Ed McMahon comes to your house with a big check and is like, hey, you're now a millionaire. Nothing like that happens.
Just cash.
Just to let you know, nothing like that happens. Sorry to deflate the idea. But then a couple years later, I was 35 and I was in a job and I didn't like it. And I had left the big accounting firm and had gone to work as a corporate controller. First a controller and then a corporate controller, because I didn't like dating with a business card that said controller on it. So I encouraged them to change my title to be corporate controller.
I mean, it makes sense.
Are there any of your people out there who like to kind of
What do you do? I'm a controller.
Yeah, that works great networking and dating. So it's like, if I'm blushing now, I would really blush when I had to hand the card over. So, but then... I was in a job, and when I left the big accounting firm, I went to work in this controller job, and we literally felt like we were saving the world. I started there right after 9/11. We were making x-ray screening machines for baggage handling when literally there were only 2 companies that were contracted by the TSA and by all of the airports around the world to do it, and we were one of the 2. So it was exciting. It was fun. Like, I really felt like I was making this contribution. But then once we literally put the machines into all the airports around the world, from Japan to Portugal to all the things. It's funny what I can remember now, like 15 plus years ago, right? But I remember working on these projects. And then they were like, hey, put your head down and close the books. And I was like, that's not the job I wanted. Like, I was so bored. I really felt like I was just checking my personality at the door. So then I left there and I took a nice package. And 3 weeks later, I was on a plane to India. And then I kind of lived Eat, Pray, Love before the book and the movie, and went to India for a month.
You did a lot of things ahead of the curve.
I'm a total overachiever. Like, people have their midlife crisis at 45. I have it at 35. I am just totally ahead of the curve. Like, quick side note, but very funny. Like, you remember the recession that started around, not the current thing we're in, but around
2008.
Well, that too. That's when I started my business. So in that year, right, when I was around 35, the early midlife crisis, did my Eat, Pray, Love thing. Then that's when I started Own Your Money. That's when I decided, like, you know, people need help around money. So yeah, I'm a intuitive, like forward thinker, because I'm like, gosh, we have like a negative savings rate. I almost became a financial advisor, but I felt like we didn't need one more financial advisor. And when I talk with friends, they would like clutch their purse, kind of like they did when they heard I was an auditor, kind of a thing. But now it was worse because now I was actually like someone that could take their money, so to speak. And I was like, okay, never mind. I don't want that job. But I didn't want to just like write the prescription of what they could do with their money. I wanted to be more of like a financial therapist, a financial coach. And then in 2007, that's when I started this company of Own Your Money. And that was like a big move in this self-worth milestone, because it was me going out on my own. And my family, my friends were so skeptical. Any of you have lived through this, like I get it. They literally had like an intervention in like my first 6 months of having a business, because they're like, why are you leaving a six-figure job to go start this business? How are you going to make any money? Nobody wants to save. Well, guess who, on the day of the federal bailout, October 2008, was on the 5 o'clock news in Boston, because I was having this conversation before everybody else was, you know? So, yeah. So then I started Own Your Money back in 2007. I've been doing that now for, you know, 15 and a half years, almost 16. And I was even ahead when the recession came. I was thinking of 2020 with the pandemic. I literally did an event called Recession Proof Your Business the week before the recession came out. I'm like, no, guys, you have to be thinking about this. And then when it finally came out, they were like, holy crap, she was right. So anyway, you know, I think those are all part of like who I am today, of why I have so much compassion for women around money, right? And for our own challenges with our worthiness, because I have had my own challenges with worthiness too. And I think that it's important that when you're hiring people and when you're working with people, that they can relate to you. You know what I mean? That it just doesn't feel like they're up on some pedestal and you're the one here struggling with worthiness challenges, you know. And I feel like you've been through your fair share of stuff too, and that you're able to bring a lot of that compassion when you help professional women now.
Yeah. Well, I so appreciate you sharing your story. And I think so many people will resonate, whether it's being the kid who felt like, you know, in psychology, we'd call it a parentified child, right? The kid who was sort of in these parental roles, had to keep everything together, right? Like, and sort of started from there. And then that same sort of dynamic carried through. And I feel like another thing that really comes out in your story is how sort of owning, like working on sort of your internal world, owning your money, facing your fears, facing the things that you had been avoiding, how that really opened things up for you, right? That
it's like the taking responsibility element, you know? And it's like, we think that we don't want to take responsibility, that we feel like it's feels easier to be irresponsible, but actually, like, it can be, I used to say, it can be as sexy, fun, and cool to take responsibility, you know, as irresponsibility has always felt, because that's where we get the results. That's where we feel like we are the cause. You know, not just dealing with the scraps or dealing with the feeling like a victim to what's happening around us. We feel like we can actually be the cause of what happens in our lives, which is a much more powerful way to be, you know? And
exactly.
If you think about like the Spider-Man quote, right? With great power comes great responsibility, you know? And also with great responsibility comes great power. And I think that it's really important to think about it from both points of view.
Yeah. And I think, you know, hopefully, I think your story is inspiring, and hopefully it will inspire people, because it is hard to face the bills, or it is hard to face the mess we may have made, right? Like, we can make messes in lots of areas in our lives, right? Like yours was sort of a financial mess, right? That wasn't really that you made it, it was that you were overloaded, but that's often, no matter what kind of mess we have in our lives, right? Like, it's usually some combination of a situation. You know, we were, you know, overwhelmed. We were trying to do too much. We all this stuff. And suddenly there's a mess. And, you know, it's really when we feel shame, our tendency is to avoid, right? Avoid, 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 because that feels easier than the facing. And the facing is uncomfortable. And you're honest, like 6 months of like, okay, let's look at this. And like, let's get the help and all of that stuff. And it takes a lot of courage, but what happens afterwards is so much better, right? Like, so much better to spend 6 months or a year or however long it takes to sort of work through that mess and clean it up than to spend years avoiding and not, and sort of feeling and staying stuck in your life because you're not owning it. You're not taking responsibility. You're not allowing yourself to move forward.
Right. And I think we don't realize how much we can plateau, you know, and just sort of like be in that for a while or kind of flatline almost, right? Because we that becomes our comfort zone. And oftentimes part of my job even is to help people get a little uncomfortable so they can be truly happy instead of staying comfortable, but actually being really unhappy in the process.
Yep.
You know, and so I think it is, it feels like we'll just stay the course, but really it's not supporting us to be our best self, to be who we want to be in the world. And years go by. Do you know what I mean? Like I didn't get married, or we didn't get married, I should say. I didn't marry myself. We didn't get married until I was 39 because it took me a while to figure this out. I had kids at 41 and 43, you know, and it's possible. Like if you're going to, if I'm going to inspire you today, that it's still possible no matter your age. I think that's part of it, right? Because we think like, and it's rough going into the doctor's office when you're like advanced maternal age. You feel like over the hill and you're like,
gosh,
is that really necessary to give, you know, label me like that?
It's not, that's, or geriatric pregnancy.
That's not, geriatric pregnancy is not helping my self-worth one little bit here, right? And so it's, you know, it's kind of realizing that, that we, you know, we can still do what we want in our life. You know what I mean? Like, you'd be amazed at how many people started things in their 30s, 40s, 50s. Like, just because you didn't do it right out of college and you're 20 somethings, it's okay. There's still time.
Yes.
You know, get on this journey now, because I'd rather have you work with the DIA, you know, like find that place of the unconditional self-worth now than be in your 70s. I coach my mom sometimes on things. Like, mom, there's still time. You're going for 100, you know, like
as long as you're still breathing, as long as you're still kicking. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and I think people often come and they feel a sense of shame, right? Like I hear people say, well, I should have had this figured out by now. And I think that keeps people stuck and keeps people from asking for help, whether it's on finances or self-worth stuff, because it's like, why haven't, and it's like, well, nobody really taught you, right? Like I'm sure there was a sense with your own financial journey of like, now there's more sort of financial educators and conversations about finances. Now there's more conversation about self-worth and mental health. But like, who was talking about this when somebody was 10 or 15 or 20? You know what I mean? It's like, and even still the conversations need to grow. And so reminding people like, it doesn't matter that you haven't started before. It doesn't matter that you haven't figured it out. Like now is your time to figure it out, to work on it, to get the help. And that's what you cannot do anything about the past in terms of like wishing you could go back 10 years and already have it figured out. All you can do is say, what's one step I can take today or in this moment now?
Right. Yeah, it's so true. I'd like inspire people every day with that idea, you know, because I think that it's like we're so busy looking at the rearview mirror that we forget to see. We have so much road ahead of us that we can enjoy at a different, deeper level, you know? And I think that there is something that like when we can learn how to just release the baggage, release the weight that we put on ourselves. And, you know, a lot of times, so when I have helped people like rewrite their money story is one of the exercises that we do. Mm-hmm. And I used to do a lot more personal finance for like 12 years. That's when I wrote the book, like the Self-Worth to Net Worth book. I actually wrote it with a psychotherapist because I really wanted to learn more about the mental, you know, psychological aspects of it. And then now I've shifted for the last 4 years helping entrepreneurs more, because I feel like whether you're going from the side hustle to the full-time gig to the empire that you want to build, right? Like you, and I, but that's, we have to be grounded, right? In a very clean money story for ourselves, because otherwise we project it. We project it in all of our salary negotiations in corporate. We project it in our, you know, negotiations, our proposals, every time we ask a client for money, right? Mm-hmm. Because we buy into their limitations when we've still bought into our own.
Yeah.
And it's up to us to change that.
Right. So I'd love for you to share a little bit more, right? So your book is From Self-Worth to Net Worth. Mm-hmm. You talked a little bit when we just started the conversation about how self-worth is something that comes up often when you're coaching people. Mm-hmm. So I'd love for you to share a little bit more about how you think self-worth sets up a foundation for financial abundance, for, you know, creating wealth and prosperity and things like that in their life.
Mm, totally. Well, if you take a step back, right? And if you think, like, not from your own point of view for a second, but just think, like, you will never be nearly as successful as you can be financially as long as you aren't looking at your money, as long as you're feeling a lack of self-worth because you're trying to fill a hole that is bottomless. It's like there's just not enough retail therapy that you can do, which is essentially spending money, right? To fill a hole inside yourself because of your own worthiness. And so as we like stop the money leaks, like that's a key one that you really need to pay attention to is like looking at where you're spending your money and how is it aligning with your values versus how is it aligning with what you need to feel complete? And how can you first and foremost inside yourself feel complete, find that place of self-worth. And I'm not saying it's the easiest thing. Like it took me years. It took me working with therapists and experts to be able to let go. I mean, most of the forgiveness that I help people do is for themselves. Yes, it's oftentimes something related to a parent or a grandparent or a partner, but fundamentally they have to find the place to forgive themselves. And so that they can feel like, okay, I have a solid foundation to build financial abundance, to build wealth on top of. Otherwise, it's like this foundation of sand and you're trying to build this Empire State Building on top. And you're like, I don't know why I'm not getting anywhere, right? And it's because it's not solid, right? There's still that hole that we keep trying to fill. And there are layers to it. Like, I'm not saying I'm like done. You know, I find that as I keep, it's a journey, you know, as I keep reaching new levels, I'm like, oh, there's another little spot that I need to heal or resolve or like hype myself up to go to some event or have some conversation or, you know what I mean? Take it to that next level. Because I think that sometimes people look at people like us, whether it's because we have a podcast, because I would do speeches, because I have a book, whatever. And we feel like, oh, we're better than you. No, we just have taken some time to figure it out to get to a certain level. And we still have new levels that we're going to. You know, and we're still like, we continue in this growth process. I think that's part of it. You know, it's like, I think sometimes people feel broken or they feel like, I don't want to get help because it's going to validate or confirm that there's really something wrong with me. And I view it completely different. Like I am always growing. I feel like if you're not growing, you're dying. Someone said that to me early on. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to be growing then. You know, like that's the mentality that I have. It's one of my core values is like, you know, really excellence and growth, because I feel like that's when I thrive, is when I am learning, when I am expanding. And when I'm expanding my comfort zone and I'm trying new things. And, you know, there was one point when I was like, I'm too comfortable. And I said to now my husband at the time, I think we were just dating, I was like, let's go jump out of a plane. He was like, really? I'm like, yep. It's like, okay. So we went skydiving, you know, but it's like doing those things, right? And just being gentle with yourself to be like, okay, there are things I haven't learned yet. You know, the basic like growth mindset, great book by Carol Dweck is mindset. It's like, instead of being stuck in this place of, I don't know this. And then we go down this unsupportive rabbit hole of, so I'm bad, you know, I'm not smart, I'm all the things. It's just getting, no, I just haven't learned this yet. And it's not like we're born with an understanding of money or wealth building or business or any of that stuff. You know, it's like, this is all learned skills. And so I feel like part of it is recognizing how can you spend the time and energy to claim your own self-worth. And then to make a decision about the external worth that you want to create coming from this very grounded place of who you are as a woman and who you are, who you want to be in the world.
Yeah, I think if people can sort of take away from this conversation, right, like your agency and your choice and, you know, like how do you own that? Right? Because it is really easy to get into a passive victim place life where you don't feel like there's anything you can do. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Versus, okay, like what choice, what step can I take? Even if I don't know how to do it, can I figure out how to do it? Can I get the support to do it? Can I get the coaching? Because I think a lot of what keeps us stuck, and I like to, you know, use the frame of stuck, not broken, right? Mm-hmm. Like what keeps us stuck is feeling ashamed, feeling like we don't know how to do it. And we can't ask for help,
yep.
right? Like feeling like we've got to do it perfectly, right? And so there's so many things. And if we can get out of the narrative of, you know, I'm bad at money. I don't, you know what I mean? Right. Those things, or I'm
because
unworthy,
my, like,
or I'm
fourth
awful,
grade
or
teacher told me I wasn't good at math. You know, it's like we hold on to these things, you know? Yeah.
Right.
So you're totally right. You know, if we can get out of that narrative, and sometimes it's even a matter of how can you become the observer of that narrative,
mm-hmm.
you know, and be like, okay, so this is me telling myself all of these negative things. Like,
right.
Really?
I like the phrase I've learned is the story I'm telling myself is I'm the worst person in the world with money, right? Yeah. Or I'm the worst human ever. And I was like, well, really? You know, is it?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Right.
And I think that's why, you know, coaching, you know, what we do is so powerful because we help people to see the dynamics that they're engaging in, or sort of like hidden mindset blocks and things that are getting in their way. Mm-hmm. And it's not always easy to do it on your own. And that's, I love that in your story, you talked about calling your friend.
Yeah.
Right. And like, what a powerful shame buster to say like, hey, I need help.
Right.
Right. Like I'm not okay. I need help. Or like, hey coach, can you help me? Or whoever, because, you know, that's really what helps us to start to kind of get out of it. You know, I'd love for you to also share, like, are there any, you know, I know these days you coach people like women entrepreneurs and experts. And I think, you know, you can provide wisdom that's going to be useful for those of us who fall into that category, as well as people who just kind of want to take more ownership in their life with their finances in general, even if they're not an entrepreneur. So do you have some, like, a couple of maybe like, you know, 2 to 3 top tips for people when they're kind of wanting, like they're hearing this and they're like, yeah, I need to take more ownership of my money, of my career, of those things. Like, what would you recommend for people?
Sure. So I love the question. And I think you reflected it back really well in terms of, you know, you have a choice, like, is life happening to you and you're the victim, or do you want life to be happening for you, you know, and because of you even? Right, to your agency point that you made. And then you become the victor, right, instead of the victim. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that it's a shift. It's a choice that we get to make. So when I think about some ways to get you started, right, one of the ones that I love doing, and people don't necessarily like doing it, I'll warn you, but it's so helpful and impactful. One of them is to notice the cost of your inaction.
Mm.
So what is it costing you to not look at the money the way that you want to be doing, you know, to not take the time to add something to your 401k, to not invest what's in your 401k, to not go after that salary raise that you really need to do, you know, and to realize that, okay, wait a second, how much of this can I work through my own? How much of this do I need a DIA for, or someone to help me through? Like, wait a second, I could be the cause of something better, but I'm not. And this is what it's costing us. Tony Robbins talks about it as like, what does it take for you to get disturbed about it, right? Like enough that you're committed to make a change. One of the models that's in the book is called the IDEA system, IDEA. It's inspiration, decision, education, action. So it's like you need to be inspired, but the key point is the decision point. It's like, are you going to make the choice? And oftentimes it takes looking at it enough to be like, oh crap, if I keep not getting this raise, and that raise is $10,000 a year, if I wait 10 years, it's well over $100,000, $150,000 because I didn't take action. Or when I used to do a lot of personal finance stuff, generally I could find $500 to $1,000 per month for my six-figure plus earners of expenses that they didn't need to be spending. Whether it was food eating out, it was taxis because they weren't planning. It was like, just like they didn't even know where the money went to. Sometimes it would be moms. I'd be like looking at their random, like one woman would like stop off on the way home from work because she was bored and she didn't quite have to get home to watch her kids yet. And I'd be like, how much do you think you spent? And she was like, I don't know, like $150. And it was like $800 one month. And I was like, do you even know what you bought? And she's like, I remember buying pajamas. You know what I mean? It's like sometimes we just do so many things so unconsciously. So
mindlessly,
mm-hmm. right? Or to fill this need that I touched on earlier. So if you can stop and say, wait a second, right? How can I get myself disturbed? How can I make that decision? And then you can move to education, which is, okay, what do I need to do that step? And then action, right? As in like, how do I take action to, you know, to do whatever is the thing that I have to do. If I have to pay attention to my money, if I have to ask for that raise, if I have to get the support to do that thing, right? And then that's what you do, right? So I think that's a key thing. On the personal finance side, it's usually about looking at your money, number one. And two, it's usually about looking at how much you're making and being like, are you tolerating under earning right now? Do you need to be asking for a raise? Do you need to just go look somewhere else if they've told you, sorry, this is what we can do? And even in this economy, there are still great jobs out there. And if anything, it's sometimes harder to fill the roles. So sometimes people are willing to pay more for those roles, right? And then on the business side, for our entrepreneurs out there, so I have this really helpful pay yourself calculator. I'll make sure that you have that, Adia. It's at ownyourmoney.com. That's my website / calculator. Or follow me on Instagram and I post a lot of tips on there. But that you decide how much you want to pay yourself. And then you get super intentional about the money that you want to make in your business. Again, our businesses are one of those areas that oftentimes we become the victim of what people want to pay, of what we feel like we're acceptable to charge. And I believe there is a price for every buyer and a buyer for every price. You just have to make that decision. What do I want to charge and who do I want to serve? Because who you will attract, if I had a $10 product, is going to be different than who I attract with a $5,000 product. The key thing is your agency in the matter, you know, is you being able to make that decision.
I love those tips. And I think, especially, you know, I'm thinking about the first one, people often think about like looking at their budgets and looking at what they're spending is like, oh God, I'm not going to be able to do the things I want to do. But I think what you're pointing at is just, are the things that you're spending money on actually fulfilling?
Right.
Right. Like, is it actually fulfilling to do the mindless Amazon shopping? Or would you rather save up for that like really nice pair of boots or dress or whatever that you might buy once a quarter that, you know what I mean? Like, because you really love it.
It's like oftentimes a quantity over quality when we're trying to fill a void, you know, when we're not paying attention. And
exactly.
Even like old subscriptions, like, you know, like you signed up for HBO, I don't know, when like Sex and the City was on, you know what I mean? And you're still paying it now like 10 years later or something, you know, because you just never looked and HBO doesn't call you and be like, hey, we're still charging you a lot when you're not even watching our channel. Like people literally would have more channels on their remote control than they could ever even find.
Watch. You know what I mean?
Like
they
could like find on the remote control, let alone watch. Right. Exactly.
So. Right. And it's like, can you be intentional, right? Like you're worthy of being intentional about really, it's not about deprivation. It's not about all of that, but it's like, what do you really want? Are you just sort of like placating anxieties and discomforts through the mindless shopping, through the mindless ordering food? And it's like, could you stop? Could you make a decision? Could you be intentional? Look at your money in order to actually say, okay, well, actually, if I saved up this money, part of that could go to a vacation or it could go to this or that. And so that's really going to make your life richer. And I think a theme of what we're talking about here is, can you move through the uncomfortable to get to the wonderful, right? Like, can you move through the work of looking at your money, owning your finances? Can you move through the self-worth work that is uncomfortable in the process very often? It's not miserable. It's not torturous, but it's often uncomfortable to get to a life where things feel really wonderful and amazing and you're really fully living instead of just kind of getting by and surviving.
Right. Well, it's like, do you want to just get by the rest of your life or do you actually want to get ahead? You know, and I think that we spend way too much time tolerating and settling, you know, guilty as charged back in the day. And now every now and again, I need to like ruffle my own feathers and do something that feels scary. Like I did this event last year called Driveway to Hell. That's not normally something that people do for fun, but it was my thing to challenge myself, you know? Feel free to DM me on Instagram. I'll fill you all about that. I'll send you the reel. I made it. Let's just say I finished. But I love that. You should like, it's like t-shirt material right there, ideas. Like, can you get through the comfortable to get to the wonderful kind of a thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's often the breakdown to the breakthrough. But the good news is that the breakthrough can be there for you. And that's what we want to remind you today.
Yes. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Belinda, for being here and sharing your story and sharing your wisdom. I know that people are going to want to connect with you further. You mentioned the Pay Yourself Calculator, which we'll link in the show notes, but tell people how to find you on Instagram and anywhere else you'd love for them to connect with you.
Sure. So my favorite spot is Instagram. I am Own Your Money on Instagram. Take a picture of the, you know, podcast, tag us, I'll reshare it. Let me know your favorite part. Send me a DM. Send me a salary negotiation question or a pricing question. Like, it's all good. I'm here for you because it's part of my mission, right? To inspire you, to help you create that rich life for yourself, right? And it's hard to do that when you don't feel worthy. So the best bet is Instagram, Own Your Money. I do have this website called ownyourmoney.com, and the Pay Yourself Calculator is ownyourmoney.com/calculator. And then I do have the book. So whether you're a professional or an entrepreneur, the Self-Worth to Net Worth book, it's all about creating wealth inside and out. And it's really easy to read, easy to pick up book. And it's even done like it has little tabs on the side. So if you're like, I just need to skip to the chapter on setting boundaries, it's there for you.
Love it.
So awesome. I'd love to connect.
Thanks.
Thanks,
Adia. Awesome. Thanks so much, Belinda. It was wonderful to have you. Thanks for joining me this week on the Unconditionally Worthy podcast. Make sure to visit my website, dradiagooden.com, and subscribe to the show on iTunes so you'll never miss an episode. You can also follow me on social media at Dr. Adia Gooden. If you love the show, please leave a review on iTunes so we can continue to bring you amazing episodes. Lastly, if you found this episode helpful and know someone who might benefit from hearing it, please share it. Thanks for listening and see you next episode. This episode was produced by Chris and Tiana, and the music is by Waterboy.